Hi guys, and welcome back to the final episode of Squad, the podcast from the military children's charity Little Troopers. I'm Katie Thistleton. I'm a TV and radio broadcaster and a mental health ambassador.
And my name's Tom Smith. I'm a military child turned professional rugby player.
It's been such a pleasure journeying through the first ever series of Squad with you all. I've learned so much from you, Tom, and from our special teenage guests all about British Armed Forces life. I didn't know anything about it before, but we've learned about managing family relationships, exams, moving home, friendships, deployment and school life. We've left no stone unturned as we've explored teenage and military life. Tom, what stands out for you from the series?
I think for me, the most standout thing was how many experiences we sort of shared, whether that's receiving stuff through the post like tarantulas, scorpions, or something silly like chicken wire in fence. I think it's kind of opened my eyes that everyone's experienced the same sort of thing. And also the teenagers we've had on, the maturity that they've spoken with, definitely they've got old heads on young shoulders. What about you? What stands out for you?
I think similarly to you, actually, just how emotionally intelligent everybody is and how mature. I definitely think that you do have to be more resilient and you have to grow up quicker when you're a military child. And I've been really impressed by how everybody has spoken and how smart they are and how much they know about life and emotions and friendships and relationships and all these things. For me, it's just been such an education. I am genuinely really shocked and surprised by all of it, because I knew nothing about military life before doing this podcast. So I can't believe how often you move house. I can't believe how unexpected it is that you have to move and you don't know what your accommodation's going to be like, and you might be in a different country and your serving parent doesn't know when they're going to be deployed. It is just a whole new world for me, and I've found it really, really fascinating. Well, if you're just finding us now and you're listening for the first time, hit pause, scroll back to episode one and listen your way through the series to this point. This is the grand finale that is episode 8. That's right, today we're going to be rounding off the series, looking back at some of the people, stories and themes that have come to light throughout the other episodes. We're going to re-examine these key moments, and with the help of some experts, we're going to make sure you leave today with a toolbox full of resources to help make military life just that bit better. So joining me today are two very special people, Louise Fettigan, founder of Little Troopers, the amazing charity behind this series, and Tamsin Messiter, an educational psychologist. Hello both, thanks for joining us today. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good,
yep,
thank
you. Doing really well, thanks.
Great, well, I would love to find out a little bit more about each of you first. So let's start with you, Louise. Can you tell us more about Little Troopers and your military journey?
I was in the army myself. I joined as a teenager. Off I went to Germany as my first posting. Met my husband and had our daughter, who's Madison. She's just gone off to university. And I founded Little Troopers, the charity, when she was 7. Iraq and Afghanistan was happening a lot. And she was really struggling and finding those times really challenging. So I decided that military children needed some specific support, and Little Troopers was founded 10 years ago. And then here we are 10 years on, I can't believe it, doing lots of really cool stuff for military kids. So really excited to be part of Squad, the podcast.
Oh, that is amazing. What a fantastic thing that you did there. And Tamsin, you're an educational psychologist. So can you first tell us, what is that? What do you do?
So educational psychologists are trained in child and adolescent development. We work with children and young people right the way from 0 all the way up to 25. And primarily our job is to really look at young people and how they're coping in schools and support them with anything from their learning to their mental health, emotional development. And that might be through working with the teachers, or it might be doing some work with the students themselves. It's a really, really varied job.
What do you think about this series of Squad?
I think the series has just been absolutely fantastic. I've loved listening to every single episode. The reason it's been really important is because I think it's really key for young people who have something in common to share those experiences and have that real feeling of kind of connectedness and, yep, someone else gets me, and or I really understand that, or I can empathise with this position. And I've also been really impressed with some of the advice that they've given each other on the episodes as well. It's been really, really fantastic.
Yeah, there's been some great advice, definitely. And there's nothing like speaking to like-minded people who have gone through or are going through the same experience as you. It's just great, isn't it? I'm really looking forward to hearing a lot of your thoughts on some of the issues we're going to talk about today then, Tamsin. Let's get cracking, shall we? The three of us have been busy listening back to the series and we have found so many important themes. So today, we're going to revisit four of them.
You're listening to Squad.
Well, a recurring experience that our military teenagers told us about on Squad has been dealing with stress, be that worrying about a parent who's deployed or the anxiety that being frequently uprooted brings. Let's take a listen to some clips.
So I was diagnosed with OCD at the time as well. That mainly stemmed from Dad being away.
How did that manifest itself? What was that like for you?
Oh, various different ways. I think the most generic way that people kind of see it is everything has to be organised, colour coordinated wardrobe, stuff like that. But for me, mine sort of stemmed from the worry of Dad being injured or not seeing him again, because obviously the sort of things he was getting up to on tour. So mine was silly stuff, like I had to do check round corners to make stuff like that. And it sounds really bizarre to somebody who hasn't experienced it, but yeah, it was my way at the time of dealing with the stress that was going on.
I've got autism, which basically I can't deal with short-term changes. I need planning ahead, I need told ahead if something's going to change. And that doesn't really work in the military. if I'm lucky, I'll get some notice and all go to plan. But I plan in my head. I just decide if I'm going to cope with it, how I cope anyway, is the worst will happen. Therefore, you're prepared. Which is not a good way of looking at it. But, I mean, it keeps it from getting worse, I suppose, if you're already there.
Do you find it, like, easy to cope with and talk out to people when your dad's away, or do you just kind of try and lock yourself in? Because I know a lot of people, either it's one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I used to be one of these. I wouldn't talk about it. I grew up in a extremely civilian-dominated primary school, so no one really understood. We had this lady, but I just wouldn't talk to her. I shut myself away. But I think once I hit a certain age, I didn't really mind talking about it.
Wow, some really powerful moments there from Tom, Dominic and Kieran. Thank you so much, boys, for sharing that. When you hear them all together like that, it's really clear just how military-related stress and anxiety can make teenage life hard. Louise, what comes to mind for you when you hear those clips?
One that really stands out for me is Tom and the OCD that he talks about. In 2010, 2011, I was in my mid-20s and my husband was on his second tour of Afghanistan. At the time, it was really difficult and I too experienced stress-induced OCD and I was obsessed with plug sockets and the cooker knobs. I actually broke two front doors from just obsessively checking it.
Wow.
And I felt so alone. I was a young girl, I was married, I had a little baby, and my husband was at war. And I just, you know, someone explained it to me that my brain was just so busy with worry that sort of the output of that was this OCD. And for me to hear that somebody else had experienced that, you know, when I heard Tom talking about it, I was like, wow, because I honestly thought I was the only person in the world to have experienced this stress OCD due to having someone I loved, my husband, in a war zone. So I completely understand why he felt that. And it was really familiar to me.
It must actually be incredibly common amongst people who have family members in the military. You know, Tom was saying there, like, oh, it sounds weird. But actually, when you think about it, it doesn't sound weird. It makes perfect sense, doesn't it? That when your life is completely out of control like that, you would be trying to find these ways to control it. Tamsin, you obviously must come across this sort of thing in your work all the time. What did you feel listening to those clips?
Yeah, I think you've actually just touched on the word which kind of sprung out for me, which is control. So I think for young people in the military, there are certainly pinch points, but also much of their life can feel out of control, you know, having to move or, you know, a parent going away. That's something that you can't do anything about. You've got to just find out how to get yourself through it and how to manage it. And actually, again, OCD can be linked to wanting to feel a need of control, to be able to be in control of something and bring yourself back to a place of kind of safety and security. I picked it up in what Dominic was saying as well about how he was preparing himself for the worst all the time. And again, that comes back to, okay, well, if I've thought about every possible scenario, then at least I'm well prepared for it and I can predict that it might happen. And again, it comes back to, then I've kind of got this, I've got this under control.
What are some of the other ways that military-related stress can manifest in young people's lives, would you say?
OCD-type behaviours is one way, but you may notice in yourself other behaviours that are even physiological, so down to beginning to have headaches or stomach aches that you wouldn't usually have, not being able to sleep very well, maybe being a bit more argumentative with family and friends, and that's all because you're trying to unconsciously re-regulate yourself. So you're trying to, again, get yourself back to feeling safe. But all our emotions are linked to behaviours. So I think any kind of behaviour change can be a little bit of a signal that something's going on for you.
Well, one thing that we've promised is that this episode will not only identify these key themes from the series, but also give actionable, useful advice to those affected. So what advice might you both give to anyone listening who also feels stressed or anxious because of any military related situations? Louise, what about you first, being someone who's actually been there and experienced it?
I think, like Kieran said, talking is really important. I think hopefully, especially with Squad, we're talking, we're sharing, and I think that's really important. You know, like I said, just hearing Tom's experience made me as an adult feel less alone. So I really hope that by talking and sharing, that, you know, people understand that there's so many others going through this, that we're really not alone. Yes, it's unique, this military life, and yes, it can be challenging. And yes, we all have hurdles as young people or as adults in the military community. But hopefully we can all draw strength from each other and we can find that others have been through similar situations such as us.
And Tamsin, what advice would you give?
I think in terms of, if you're recognising yourself, you're beginning to feel stressed, and stress, you know, really is that feeling like you can't cope with the demands that are being placed on you. That's where when it kind of gets out of balance, is being able to work out what works for you in those situations to help you relax a little. For some people, you know, it's doing some yoga or some meditation, or someone talked about going for a kickabout, and just being able to recognize, okay, I'm at a pinch point in my life where I need to now engage in a little bit of self-care and really take care of myself and my emotions. And another thing you can try and do is to try and challenge some of your negative thoughts. So sometimes when we're feeling overwhelmed and stressed, we can get these little voices that are kind of saying, oh, the situation's hopeless, or I'm really worried, or I can't cope. And just kind of gently prodding, okay, at the moment I'm struggling with this, but one thing I can do to help myself is X, Y, or Z, and then in the future it's going to look a bit different, and trying not to get stuck in the cycle of negative thoughts. And that comes back to where those self-care activities can really help. But I cannot reiterate enough, communication is just the number one.
Amazing. Some great advice there, guys. Thank you so much. Let's turn now to the next theme. One thing that nearly every teenager who spoke to us on Squad told us was that they understood more and more about the risks involved in their serving parents' job as they got older. So when they were younger, they weren't really aware of their parents' job and the challenges that came with it, but slowly as each year passed, it dawned on them, and that sense of realisation was quite hard to manage. Let's take a listen to some clips.
What sort of age did you start to realise that it sort of dawned on you?
So he was away a lot when I was younger, so it's quite easy just to brush it off, our dad's away again. But I think it was about maybe 9 or 10. I found that quite, I think it's quite late to really understand and grasp it.
I was exactly the same age.
To start off with, it was a bit of a worry, but you grow up and you think, well, he's done it before I was born and he's fine. But if he keeps getting deployed, it increases the chance of something happening. When I was young, I kept it to myself. But as I got older, I was happy to speak about it quite openly, which I think helped a lot.
I don't remember it exactly, but I was told when I was 5 months old, my dad went away. And when he came back, I had no idea who he was. He was a complete stranger to me.
Oh, because you were a little baby.
I was so young, I just didn't know who he was.
What about you guys?
The first time my dad went away was when I was a baby as well, to Afghanistan. And my mum, again, told me what it was like and just said that I cried when he came as a baby because I missed him a bit.
Tom, what about you? Have you got any early memories of your dad being deployed?
I think the first one I properly remember was probably when he went out to Afghan and Iraq. Because I was a bit older then, I probably realised a bit more
where he was going,
what he was doing. So that was.
Otherwise, he could have just been down the pub, couldn't he, when you were younger?
He could have been fetching milk or something like that. I'm not too sure.
Kieran, Kaylee, Adrian, and Tom there talking about how their understanding of their parents' job changed as they grew older. Louise, what are your thoughts on hearing that? Were you aware of that as your daughter was getting older, that she was going to maybe start understanding things a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was pregnant and my husband was in the Iraq war. Then he went back again. For her first kind of 3 years of life, he was home about 10 months accumulatively. So he was away pretty much the first years of her life. And I remember thinking at the time, like, oh my goodness, this is awful for her. But actually, in hindsight, now she's 18, I can see that those weren't the years that impacted her. It was really when she turned 8 years old probably, was when she really started to understand that her dad was in the army and that he went away and he sometimes had to go to a war zone. And listen, to all the children listening, all the teens listening to this, I get more rubbish at this the longer I do it. The older you get, you know, as Kieran said, the more aware you are of what they're doing. And I think something that Kieran said that really resonated was that you think your luck's going to run out. And I think that was something I have definitely had those thoughts where I'm like, you know, my husband, or in Kieran's case, his dad has been to Afghanistan once and he went to war and he's done 6 months and he's come home safe. So then when they come home and say, I'm going back to Afghanistan, you're like, oh my goodness, are we going to have that luck again? I mean, my husband's been to Afghanistan 4 times and the last time wasn't actually in conflict, but I was distraught because I'd convinced myself that our luck was going to run out. And I think the fact that Kieran communicated that shows that we're all thinking the same thing. You know, those things are going through our mind where you just literally pray that the luck will continue.
I mean, that's something I do all the time anyway. Like, I think if I'm happy, and I've done this since I was a teenager, like if I'm happy and everything's going well, I think, oh no, something's going to pull the rug from under me. So, you know, even I can resonate with that. And I don't have a particular reason why the rug would just be pulled from under me. I mean, things just happen in life. Bad things happen in life. So if you are from a military family and you've got that in the back of your mind all the time, I can really imagine how that must plague you a bit. Tamsin, what are you thinking listening to all that?
Yeah, so I made some links between, you know, the kind of ages and that understanding. If we think of academic development, it kind of progresses on a trajectory. So, you know, if you think about learning maths, you learn about number and you build upon it to be able to add numbers and then multiply and you progress with your learning. Our emotions work in the same way. So our emotional development is kind of on a trajectory and we need certain building blocks to complete our emotional development. So it makes sense that at certain periods of life when we've kind of almost unlocked the next level of emotional development, that we are adding to the complexity of feelings that we can feel and therefore worries that we can have. So if you think of maybe a kind of 6 or 7 year old is thinking, okay, parents away and the emotions they're experiencing are, you know, a sense of longing for that parent to come back, they're missing them. You add in a couple of years more experience, then you're adding in, okay, but I understand now what mum or dad's job looks like. So you're layering in the kind of frustration that they're in danger and a whole nother, your next level of emotions. And then also kind of where Louise said, you know, it gets harder again into kind of adulthood. Up until 25, you're the front part of your brain is still developing, so you're slightly more of a risk taker. As adults, we're quite risk averse. So once that part of the brain is complete in its development, you know, so you've got loads of things at play. You've got your experience, your previous experience, you've got these next levels of emotion, but you're now also at a point where you're more risk averse, and you've got your family unit, and any threat to that can be really quite scary.
Wow, it's really fascinating to hear the psychology behind it, though. It makes you realise that it's totally normal that you're going through that, and everyone else is as well, even though you might think you're the only one. It's the way that our brains are wired. What is it like if you've got siblings? Because you might be realizing things at different rates. So perhaps if you're a little bit older, you might be starting to recognize what your military parent's job is and worrying about it. But maybe you've got a younger sibling, and then you might feel a responsibility to protect them a little bit, or let them know what's going on. Or perhaps, you know, there might just be a bit of conflict if you're both feeling differently about it. You might be feeling really stressed, but your sibling might be like, oh, there's nothing to worry about, what's wrong with you? Is that something that happens, do you think, Louise?
Yeah, I do. I think siblings, we've heard on Squad where military teens have had younger siblings, or they've had similar age siblings and they've been at school together, and that's been really, really helpful because it's helped them in hard situations. We've had situations where, you know, your younger sibling is finding it hard and you're sort of having to help them through that. Obviously, you're both going through, or if there's multiple siblings, you're all going through a similar situation. So hopefully there should be a sense of comfort from that, that you're all going through something similar and you can help the younger ones and learn from the older ones.
Do military children really grow up faster, Louise? And what do we really even mean by that? That's something that we've heard a lot during these podcasts, that you have to grow up fast. Should military children really have to grow up fast? What does that mean?
I think from what I've experienced firsthand is military children often have to go through highly emotive scenarios, maybe at a younger age than their civilian peers would. So they're having to learn about saying goodbye and then saying hello again, which in itself is an emotional roller coaster. You know, learning to have a parent away from home, moving home, having to make friends, moving school. All of these things, you have to dig deep and you have to really like search through your emotional toolbox to dig out all the bits and pieces that you need to kind of get through those situations. And if that's happening to you from the get-go, so you might have already been to a couple of schools by the time you're 8, then yeah, I guess you are having to be slightly more emotionally intelligent than you would naturally because you're going through these situations. Yeah, maybe military children do grow up faster than their civilian peers, but I think they're great qualities to learn. And I think as long as we can all dig deep to get through those challenges, they will reap the rewards. I don't like the word resilience, but I do think it will make them stronger.
Tamsin, what would you say if someone does tell you that you're resilient, but actually you think, no, I feel really delicate, what should you do?
I think it's about exploring what resilience means for you and what it might mean for someone else. You know, asking that person, well, what do you mean by, you know, you're resilient? Because I think there would, you know, not be one definition that's the same for everybody. And I think, you know, accepting it's okay to kind of push back and say, whatever resilience means to you, today I'm feeling rubbish, or today I'm feeling super happy, something great's happened. But you know, pushing back against the expectation that maybe the word resilience is linked with being strong, and you know, just again checking in with yourself and reflecting back exactly how you are feeling.
Wise words, thank you very much. It's important to remember that behind everyone who serves in the British Armed Forces is a full family. Spouses, children, aunties, uncles, grandparents, the list goes on. And the impact of a serving person's job can impact everyone in that family back at home. This was another theme that kept coming up throughout the series, the impact of a parent's deployment on the rest of the family.
He was in Iraq for 6 months, I think, and it was quite a like tough time for him when he came back. And he did go through quite a dark time, but I didn't realise until my mum had told me years later that my mum had seen, or not my mum, my dad, sorry, had seen a boy my age come through the camp that he was working at, injured because he'd stepped on an IED trying to run into the base, trying to escape the Taliban. And my dad was like properly like, he wasn't, like he was not in the right place, but I couldn't tell. I just thought he was like upset for a while. So it took him months to like come over that period. And it took my mum years to come out and tell me about it.
I remember being on the phone to my dad when he was on deployment in Afghan or Iraq, I can't quite remember where. And suddenly in the middle of our conversation, we heard this massive bang and the line just cut. And we didn't hear anything from him for like over 2 days. And eventually we learned that the base he was on had been bombed. Luckily he was safe, but every second not knowing felt like an hour. I was really quite young, so I don't think I fully grasped the situation or understood what had happened. To me, it just felt like, oh, he's lost signal or something. But looking back now, obviously, terrifying. It's terrifying to look back on. Oh, it really scared my mother, as you can imagine. To lose contact when she knew he was in such a dangerous place. And as an adult, obviously, she knew the lines weren't cutting for any reason. She knew he sort of given us a talk before he'd left about the operation to cut off comms when there's a bomb, and you know, whatever reason they need to cut off comms with the outside world and relatives back home. So when we heard the bang, we knew that she knew that something serious had happened on that base. She had, I think my little brother Jack, he must have been about one or two, and me to look after, and she done that all on her own because she's an absolute trooper. But I can't imagine what that was like. But no, I don't even think we told anyone else. I think it was sort of a rule that my father made where it was sort of, don't say unless you need to, don't worry my mother, you know, don't worry my sister. So I don't think we did tell anyone else outside of us three.
Wow, examples there from Alfie and Megan. My goodness, those experiences are so emotional and hard-hitting, aren't they? Louise, what came to mind for you when you heard those clips?
To anybody outside the military community, I'm sure they would be like, oh my goodness, but those situations are quite commonplace to military families and they make up part of your patchwork and they're so difficult. It's so hard to listen to the children relay those as memories of their childhood that they will carry with them forever. And having a parent deployed in a war zone, it's just something a child will never forget. You know, I think I have had those moments where you're in the supermarket and you miss a phone call, for instance, from your partner or your dad or your mum in a child's situation. And you literally want to cry in the cereal aisle because you know that you can't call them back. It's not like a missed call where you can just call them back. You don't, if you miss that call, you might not hear from them for another 10 days. And, you know, if that line then goes dead when you are, you know, I completely related to everything the kids were saying, that, you know, those feelings, those emotions, it is really, really difficult.
It sounds it. And like you say, it's quite hard to comprehend if you're not from a military family. Tamsin, how did those clips make you feel? What were your thoughts?
I really recognised the high level emotion from both of those clips. But I think we do also need to see these events for what they are. And for young people and their families, you know, for the mum, for the dad, it's not just them, it's the impact on the wider family. These can be traumatic experiences in the moment, you know, that really need to be seen and recognised as that, so that the family can move on together from those situations. The young people have also then got the additional stresses added on of how do I manage this without upsetting my mum, who I know is really worried at the moment, or how do I cope with this when, you know, my little brother doesn't really understand what's going on, and I've got more of an awareness of what's going on. So there's very complex layers to such, you know, specific situations.
Yeah, definitely. Is there enough support for teenagers who have parents serving in the forces? Louise, what would you say? You know, it must be really hard for young people to go through something like this, and as Tamsin's just saying there, just carry on with normal life and maybe try and act like everything's okay.
I always think anybody in the world could survive a 6-month deployment. It would be difficult, but you'd be all right. You'd come out the other side. But to have to go through that over and over again throughout your life, repeatedly, and sometimes straight after each other, eventually does take its toll. And I don't think there is enough specific support for military teenagers, which is why we exist, which is why Squad the Podcast was so exciting, to get lots of military teenagers together and give these guys a voice, because those voices are really important and these memories are really important to talk about. And I think it's important to say, hey, when you get to 18, you're going to look back on everything you've been through. It's going to be your patchwork of military life, and it's not all going to have been easy, but it's going to make you who you are.
Great advice. Thank you so much, guys.
You're listening to Squad.
Education is a core part of every teenager's life. School, lessons, college, uni, exams. These can be hard and stressful things to manage at the best of times, but can be even harder when you have a parent serving in the military. So many of the young people on Squad had a story to tell about their school and military lives colliding. For the final time, let's listen to some clips.
When I was doing the actual application for UNIS Adversity, so before I do my personal statement, they're just getting your details. I was actually born in Germany and I lived there for 2 years. And when they asked, where were you born? And I put Germany, they started asking for visas. How long have I been in the UK? Like, do I have permission to live here? And it's like, this is my home. This is, I am British. Like, I have no German in me, but actually, just being a military child and being born a completely different place, they almost weren't prepared for that. Like, I called and I said, I was like, look, I'm British, but I was born under the British Army, so I'm completely British. My birth certificate's British. They just said to say I was born in the UK, even though I wasn't. So they hadn't almost accounted for a military child applying for uni in different circumstances.
In year 8 in secondary school, so starting my 8th year of education, I was attending my 8th school. One thing I did notice when I came back, obviously I live in Wales now, I lived a lot of time in England, following the England syllabus. And when I moved to Wales and started year 8, it turned out that the year 8 syllabus was exactly the same as the year 7 England syllabus. So I just did the exact same thing twice, and I felt like a magician in those classes when they'd be like, so what's this answer? I'd be like, I know this, I done it last year.
My dad's been deployed, I can't even count how many times, it's been so many. But I think the worst times are when you don't know how long it's gonna be, or you have a rough guide and then it gets delayed and then it's delayed longer and it just builds up. You've got to go into school each day and get on with all this work, and you've got friends who you've got to, you know, go and have a good time with. But at the same time, you know, you don't know where they are. You don't know how long they're going to be away for. You don't know when you're next going to see them. And I think it can impact you, even if it's not impacting your work directly. It's going to have like an emotional effect. You know, you're going to find everything a bit more harder, a bit more stressful. Everything's a bit more difficult.
So we just heard from Madison, Megan and Brooke talking about how being a military teen has impacted their education. Louise, what are your thoughts on that?
I think each of those accounts that we heard are all really valid and they're all really important points. And it's exactly why the Little Troopers at School project exists. Madison and the UCAS application, that's my daughter. And I think that's really important to highlight, that she was born in Germany as part of a British Armed Forces family. You know, she's got a British birth certificate. It's under the army bubble. But UCAS just did not know how to deal with that. And that's taking away part of a military child's identity. You know, she really loves the fact that she was born in Germany. And it was just like, oh, don't worry about that. Say you're born in the UK. And I bet there's so many military teens listening to this that are also born overseas and also will go on to university. So it's important that the military community is recognised as such.
Tamsin, what did you think about that, sort of coming from the perspective of somebody who works with young people in regards to their mental health? You know, what impact can it have on you if your school experience is disrupted so much?
Yeah, I think those clips were all quite varied, and I quite enjoyed, in a way, Megan had put the positive spin on it. You know, I felt like a magician. But in terms of her learning, it's not great progression to just be doing the same material for a year and repeating.
As good as it might feel to get one over on everyone else in your class and already know.
Exactly.
We actually did hear like so many different perspectives and experiences throughout the series. And I actually learned that some schools do seem to be better than others at supporting their military pupils. Some were better than others at giving that support. What can listeners do if they feel like they're not getting enough support or they're not understood enough? What do you think, Louise?
Why we're here is to talk about Little Troopers at School. We have created lots of resources, especially for military teenagers and, you know, in secondary school, ways to help bring military children together in education settings, to talk about, to be with others that understand. That's really important, to just be with somebody who is also from a military family that can completely relate to the things that you two are going through. And whether you're in, you know, whatever year of school you're in, you can all bring something to the party. So Kieran and Alfie Create, you know, who have been on Squad, they sort of went to their school and said, hey, we'd like to do something to bring the military children together. And they started a military kids club in their school where they take the younger ones and the older ones and they all come together and they share and they regularly, once a month or whatever, get together. You can do something like that and definitely come to Little Troopers, because we are really making sure that we have lots of resources for older military children.
Tamsin, what advice would you give to young people who feel like they need a little bit of extra support with their education experience?
So I would definitely say find that person. So if you're not sure where to go in school, in secondary school there will always be, you might not know who they are to begin with, but there will be a pastoral team within school who you can try and make some connections with and find kind of your key person in school that you can talk to. I had also thought about, you know, Louise has mentioned there about whether you would, as an individual, you know, want to go on to the school council or want to set up any groups and, you know, raise awareness, not only for staff who probably need it, but also for other young people in school.
It must be quite hard to make those connections when you're only at a certain place for a short period of time. So what if people feel like it's just not worth it?
I think so long as you feel like you've got someone, that's kind of the key thing, really. If you feel like maybe that's not going to be a teacher, it might be someone else in school, maybe a peer mentor or someone else that you can kind of connect with. And I think I would probably say that it is worth it. You might feel like it's not worth it at the time, but I think you'll always get something valuable from making a connection with someone.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. Amazing. Thank you so much, both of you, for your fantastic advice. Can't believe I'm saying this for the last time, but that's all we've got time for today on Squad, at least for this series anyway. That was such an interesting episode though, wasn't it, Tom?
Yeah, it was really great to recap so many of the themes, opinions and experiences that were brought up throughout the series as a whole, and so valuable to hear expert input and insight on it all.
Absolutely. A big thank you to our experts who joined us for this episode, Louise Fettigan, founder of the charity Little Troopers, and Tamsin Messiter, educational psychologist.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I think for me, hearing all like that, I just thought, hats off to you guys. Like, hats off to the military children and teenagers of the British Armed Forces. You guys definitely have a really unique experience, and I think it has incredible benefits and pros and highs, and I think it really sets you up in life in a really good way. But also it has some really tough, unique challenges that I don't think us civvies really understand at all. It's been so amazing hearing so many young people talk openly about their feelings and experiences. And we always like to end on advice, so I think that's got to be my final piece of advice for the series. Keep talking. Whatever you're going through, find a teacher, a friend, a parent, a family member, a pen pal, anyone you trust, even your pet, in fact. We heard from lots of the military teenagers that their dogs are their best friends. Anyone you can find who you trust to speak to. Tom, it's been great to have you by my side through this series. You've shown this civvy the ropes. You've taught me so much about military life, so thank you. And once again, hats off to you. It sounds like it was tough at times, but I think you've grown up to be a lovely young man.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
And thank you to you for listening to Squad, which has been brought to you by the charity Little Troopers. You can find loads of additional resources on their website, www.littletroopers.net. Squad has been produced by TBI Media. A special thanks to producer Sarah Baker, assistant producer Conrad Morris, to Will Farmer for the music and Mark Pitton for making it all sound great, and to the team at Little Troopers, Kate Cashmore and Louise Fettigan, for all their hard work. Thanks, everyone. Bye,
cheers,
guys.
Thank you. Bye.